Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week, and we review them. We got a big stack today, hey. So let's get right in. Oh, yes. What's up, Pete?
I know Justin has some beef with you, but I just wanted to say, Alex, you know, great job on The Stack, man. You know what I mean? You really curate a fun stack.
I agree.
Appreciate it.
Here's the beef I have with you. It's ribeye steak, because that's how good work you're doing, Alex. It's a positive, good beef. That's just good beef.
Great. Yeah. And let's just leave it at that. I'm sure it won't come up again. Ultimate Spider-Man number 13 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Marco Cicchetto. There were multiple cliffhangers in the last issue, so spoilers beyond this point, where first it turned out that Peter Parker was missing and had been replaced by his, we're not calling a symbiote suit yet, it's his picto suit or whatever it is,
Who is very different.
Like Peter Parker. Meanwhile, Peter and Harry have been taken by Kraven the Hunter. We pick up here, they have been gone for months at this point. I think two months is what we find out, which is crazy. And not only that, Richard Parker, Peter's and Mary Jane's son, is inside the suit and picking up the slack as Spider-Man. So some big stuff going down here. Another fantastic issue I thought of this book, but what did you guys think?
I love this comic, and I just love how far away from the initial idea we are. Remember when this first came out and it was like, oh, if Peter Parker didn't become Spider-Man, essentially, until later in life. And it was like, oh, weird alternate take. And now it's like so wild how many different things have happened. You got them on the run, his best friend, Harry, on the run in the Savage Land. It is awesome. And I think the most essential thing, though, and this is a weird idea, the time. The way the time moves in the Ultimate Universe, in this comic specifically, raises the stakes so much for me. And when it was revealed they've been gone for 2 months, I was like, this is very stressful suddenly.
Well, I think this is Justin's ultimate Spider-Man here. I think this is his perfect kind of thing, because what they're doing is they're yada-yadding Peter and MJ's relationship, and we get the budding on the kind of last panel here of, I think, what's going to be the new hot relationship, and that's, Spider-Man's son with the new Black Cat. So, Justin, you get it. You get the relationship that you've always wanted here, and my favorite relationship gets pushed to the side, but at least it's happening. So super pumped about that.
You always wanted a long-distance relationship between Peter and Mary Jane, right?
Yeah. I'll take any relationship as long as it's Peter and MJ, however I can get it. So I'm also enjoying this, even though it's insane. But high stakes. This is an ultimate book. Feels like an ultimate book. They're making huge choices, big swings. So it's fun.
I just wanted to agree with you, Justin, about the time dash and how stressful it is.
Yeah.
Particularly, I was thinking very hard reading this issue. What a interesting writing challenge to essentially, rather than being like, okay, we're picking up emotionally where these characters are, where we left them. No, there's an entire... sometimes like month of time that has passed between there where these characters have moved forward and experienced different things. So there's a lot more going on there. I almost feel like it's this freight train that we're reading and we're playing like catch up, and then we get to catch up for a little bit. We're running alongside and we're like, oh, that's crazy. What's going on in that boxcar?
Yeah. And
we fall back again. It's awesome. Everybody gets this metaphor.
Alex uses a lot of running to catch trains, like a hobo analogies. That's how he sort of sees the world. It's like, oh, tough day. Yeah. I was trying to catch up to the...
You're a little spindle.
Well, should we talk
sack?
About the next can of beans in our bindle, if that's all right? I'd love to move on. Talk about
Alex
it.
Was raised community theater hobo, so this is his belief system.
Yeah. I do. Most of my training, my being raised, was turning to people and being like, oh, didn't see you there.
And then monologue.
Wow. Absolute Wonder Woman number 4 from DC Comics by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman. This issue, the Tetracide is still attacking the city. Wonder Woman consults with Etta Candy, whose sister is a witch, to try to get her arm back so she can take down the Tetracide. Once again, big emotion in this issue, big action, big wild swerves and changes. Another incredible issue of this book.
Yes, agreed. This is really badass and glorious. First off, very cool cover. But this is just action-packed. And, you know, sometimes you need a more badass sword before you go into battle. Completely understand that. Get some extra magic. You know, usually you don't think Wonder Woman and magic, even though she does have an invisible jet and stuff. But, this
that's
is
science. Kind of, that's science.
Well... Anyways, this is fun magic stuff, and sometimes you're like, yo, I'm gonna need my arm. I'm gonna need it in battle, so you gotta magic it up. You know, cover yourself in blood. Hey, if Wonder Woman came up to me off the street and said, hey, I need your blood, I wouldn't even ask questions. I'd just be like, you got it, Wonder Woman.
How would you do it? Would you just take a pen and jab it into your neck?
Yeah, that'd be the quickest way. You know?
The quickest.
Yeah.
So let me just get this straight.
Pen going, you know what I mean?
Let me just get this straight. If a pretty tall, dark-haired woman wearing Amazon. A tiara walked up to you tomorrow on the streets of your town and said, I need your blood, you would literally, someone would have to stop your hand from jabbing the pen into your neck to spray blood all over.
And to be clear, based on where Pete lives, this is like a wooded path. So we're having some sort of tall woman walk out of the trees and approach you in this way.
Wow.
Yeah, for context, Pete lives inside the movie The Village. He lives in the part where they don't believe the time.
The woods part. I live in the woods part, not where...
Yeah, he doesn't live on the other side of the fence where it's just normal.
Yeah.
He lives in the woods part.
Is that in the background? I could always hear people being like, thy podcast is too loud.
Yeah. Podcast is go in the barn and shout at each other. That's what I call a podcast.
Anyways, back to this book. Amazing art, amazing action. This is a ton of fun.
Why were you laughing, Justin?
When?
Right at the beginning of this review.
I don't remember, but I can't not think about Pete jabbing his neck. I think...
Was it because you were going to start talking and I immediately started talking?
No, I don't know. I don't remember. It's just... I'm having fun.
So
I'm
much
just having
changed.
Fun. Yeah, you know, it's a whole new world. I love this book. This book is, we've complimented every aspect of it. But I think the part, it just feels so complete. It's like such a vibe. The art, everything, it feels so different and fresh, but also whole. And that, to me, is hard. It's a fourth issue in. This is a whole different part of the DC Universe where, you know, the rules... I'm sure they have rules that they figured out before they launched these books. But the rules still feel like not... They feel like it's not like cooling lava. Like, they could change. We don't know exactly what it is. And this book just crushes every aspect of it. It's one of the best reads of the week.
Yep.
Void Rivals, number 16, from Image Comics and Skybound, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Lorenzo DeFelici. In this issue, we're getting Suxoid versus Pythona. Big Suxoid issue. I want to put a spoiler warning here as well, because Suxoid...
Alex is going to cry?
I'm going to cry. This is one of my favorite running jokes from comics, is Robert Kirkman just like cutting in for one or two pages of Suxoid being like, I miss my wife. And that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
Well, it's made even more ridiculous by what happens in this issue.
That's what I was getting towards is...
I don't see what's ridiculous. People
kicks
miss their
ass.
Wives sometimes.
Like, it's a great fight scene. Lorenzo DeFelici draws here. Very cool. They amp him up to Suxoid being like, no way you can beat me. I'm Suxoid, the saddest man in the galaxy. And then at the end of the fight, he gets chopped in half and dies? That was like,
spoilers. I was like, you're not going to give last words about his wife or family? I was shocked.
Yes.
I thought he was going to have...
That's crazy to me, but because clearly, like, he's having... I know Robert Kirkman is a guy who... Like, he killed Rick Grimes. He shot Carl in the head. Everything that he did in Invincible, he has no bones about being like, I love this character, let's kill them off. Yeah. But at the same time, it's such a bummer because I want to like Void Rivals, but Succoid is the one funny part.
Exactly.
In it, and everything else is so deadly serious.
It's also the one part of it that feels like it's you know, a thing we can signpost, or it's like it happens. And the rest of this book is hard to hold on to for me. And like, especially the reveal at the end is just another Transformer. I was like, guys, aren't we out? How many more
what do
you got?
Mean? We haven't even scratched the surface, dude. There's so many Transformers, bro. Come on.
Yeah, I know. There was 40 years of people being like, what if it's another kind of truck? And so, sure, we're going to get more of those.
There's a lot of different kinds of cars. There's a lot of different trucks.
Yeah, there's crazy things in this issue, and I don't want to lump on it too much because, again, I want to like it, but, like, whatever the female character who has been wandering through the dark for issues now, she encountered this big ball of light, and the big ball of light at the end of the last issue was like, what do you want? And this issue, she's like, oh, sorry, wrong ball of light, and keeps walking. I was like, so what about the ball of light? Why do we have to go to another place? And then same thing happens with the Cobra La, where they run into Succoid, and they're like, we got to attack the Succoid guy. Don't like this place. Let's leave.
Yeah.
So it's just like things keep kind of bumping into each other and then going in the opposite direction.
Also, well, you guys are acting like the Succoid bit's going to be over. You know, probably next issue we're going to get his wife going, ah, I miss my husband. You know what I mean?
Maybe
we'll
get bits. I would like
we'll get bits of the funeral.
That's much less fun. That's tragic. I mean?
But, you know, I think this is a blast. I'm having so much fun with this. The nostalgia factor is super high. But
for
this
Void
is still,
Rivals.
Yeah, this is still just a fun of like, hey, you love this old thing? Well, I'm going to update and put some new stuff on it. I'm like, great, awesome, thank
you. Here's the thing. I would argue we haven't gotten a lot of new stuff. We have a story of the Void Rivals.
About this whole Succoid thing is all new. And, you know, finding balls of light but not the correct ones.
You know,
I mean, who can't relate to that?
Do you know what this feels like? This feels like the show that was on at 4:30. Like, you have... whatever was the 3 o'clock show, and then you have G.I. Joe and Transformers, and then you are like, oh, okay, I gotta do my homework or go to dinner or whatever. That's what this is.
4:30. You're saying 4:30 is the bad time slot, bro?
I know what you're talking about. There was always a show that was like sort of like a ripoff of another show, and it was like on near it, but it was like, all right, I gotta go do something else now. And for me, it was the Mystic Knights of Tir-Nanog, which is a Power Rangers ripoff. Wow. And I was always like, this show doesn't make any sense. But it was there. I would watch it. What I was going to say is I feel like this comic just doesn't – it keeps pushing off the story. It keeps making references. But it's just never going. Everything's bumping around. But the actual bites of narrative, I just feel like we're not getting them. And I think that is – it's like the dollar bill on a fishing line. It keeps getting pulled away. And I think we just need to grab onto something.
I don't know. I'm having a ton of fun, and I think someone wandering around in the dark and then discovering a giant Transformer is a fun thing. So
that's your dream. That's your dream scenario.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we move on and talk about a different type of robot with the Terminator, number 4 from Dynamite, written by Declan Shalvey, art by Lorenzo Ray. As we have been doing in the series, we're jumping around to different places and time periods where the Terminators are doing unknown missions. This one is a submarine thriller with the Terminator hiding out as one of the crew members and basically wants history to stay on course here so that they blow up. I thought this was another really good issue of this book. The setting is making this whole thing feel very fresh.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that I know I always say this, but great cover. Great cover to this issue.
Oh, you always say that? Well, I was going to say misleading cover because this cover makes it seem like the Terminator is the submarine. And I thought, well, that's a fun twist. I haven't seen that before. And then it turns out it's just a regular Terminator on a submarine. And I was like,
you
misleading
wanna
cover.
you want a Thomas the Tank Engine, but killing people?
Yeah,
situation?
You know what I mean? Like, how dangerous would that be if Terminator was a nuclear submarine? You. That would just be awful, man. Hard to take down the Terminator submarine.
Yeah. I'll be... Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, this impression. Is the hunt for Red, I'll be Boktober, the best way to sum it up.
Yeah, I just, other than the misleading cover, this is good stuff, great art.
Misleading cover.
It's a cool cover.
It is a cool cover, but you think Terminator's a sub.
No, you do not. Okay, whatever. Go ahead, John.
It's funny because it's the sub on the face on the back of the sub, because that'd be a weirder place for the face. It's the butt.
Yeah.
It's the Terminator's like pooping out the back. You know what I mean? I also like this. I think the setting, it feels claustrophobic. It feels super contained. Again, another tense comic. I think the specificity with which they're choosing the settings for these stories has been really great uniformly in all four issues of this.
X-Men Xavier's Secret, number one for Marvel, written by Alex Pachtadal, art by Diogenes Neves. This is a collection of the Marvel Unlimited comic. I believe there were six issues of it that we're getting here, which basically breaks down to two stories that bridge the gap between Krakoa and From the Ashes. One focuses on Cyclops and Jean Grey spending one last vacation together before they split apart on their separate titles and missions. And the other one shows a little bit of what's been going on with Professor Xavier. And the way we're reading this is afterwards, but I believe at the time it introduced the character Scurvy, who played an important role in the raid on Grey Malkin crossover. Justin.
Scurvy.
Justin, what did you think about this one?
I really need, and this is just a pet peeve.
Justin,
I need Professor X to be different or better or something. This issue of him this whole issue was about, or that his story was just wallowing in his badness. And, I just want that to change so badly. I liked the front story though, with, Cyclops and.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's nice. Oh,
interesting. I actually like the Xavier story a little better. It was very dark. It's all about Xavier kind of messing with this journalist's head as she tries to find out what happened to him and what happened to the mutants in Krakoa. It feels a little bit like what Kieran Gillen and Casper Wingard are doing on the Power Fantasy to me, but with Xavier, and obviously there's a very clear analog going on there. But I really dug that story, even though it was dark. Pete, I assume you liked neither of these?
Oh, well, that's interesting that you say that. You know, what I did like about the first story is that Jean Grey couldn't even stand being around Scott. She was just like, oh, you are just the worst. Get me the fuck out of this relationship.
It's
and then Scott
about,
like went wandering off. And he
what
was
I
just
liked
like,
about it, not to interrupt you saying nonsense, Pete, but it was like a different type of story. Like it sort of the
yeah,
like
it talked about how they shouldn't be together and they don't really fit.
They're sort of the opposite. They're lamenting the fact that they're not going to be together and having an emotional time with it. The other pet peeve I think is Phoenix being so powerful is also an impediment to a lot of stories with her, even the ongoing title that's happening right now.
Why don't we move on and talk about Black Canary, Best of the Best, number three from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Ryan Suk. We are getting more of the fight to determine who is the best hand-to-hand fighter in the DC universe between Lady Shiva and Black Canary. This issue, we get a flashback of her training with Batman, and the present Ted Grant, a.k.a. Wildcat, is in her corner as things start to go very wrong. I feel like a little bit of a broken record with this series, but... Yeah. This is some killer fight scenes from Ryan Suk. The backstory is very emotionally charged and well done, and the announcers continue to be ludicrous.
It is crazy how much they're talking. Yeah. It's fun. It's funny that is a part of this book, but this book has a lot of moving parts that are really working together. And, you know, each issue is very similarly structured. It's, like you're saying, the fight... Some flashback where we're figuring out how Black Canary got here. The stuff with Green Arrow and Vandal Savage I thought was really cool. But the fact that they're able to make this not be repetitive, despite the fact that it's just Black Canary getting her ass kicked three issues straight pretty intensely and really letting the art be awesome there is, you know, it's hard to make that interesting, I think, and this book really does it.
Yeah, this is very enjoyable. I'm having a blast with this. Love the story. Love all the action. Hey, Batman just shows up. You know, that's fun. And then I love the mom and daughter stuff. And then great use of the non-factor Ollie because he sucks.
Wow, you have changed, Pete. Let's talk about Ripperland number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Steve Orlando and John Harris Dunning. Hey, art by Alessandro Oliveri. This is kind of a complicated premise that they take a little while to get around to in the issue, but it is baked in there that essentially because of leaving the European Union, the UK is broke. The only way they can get money is by, I believe it's the United States, turning them into a Victorian era theme park where everybody talks and acts like they're in the Victorian era and folks come to visit them. So it's not exactly Westworld because nobody is robots, but it's kind of like Westworld adjacent. And into that, somebody starts killing people in the style of the Jack the Ripper murders. I actually really liked the way they slow played you into this premise.
Yes, agreed.
And it works. Like, it's a crazy premise, but they figure out a way to make it work. They give a good foil to it. So overall, I was very impressed with this first issue.
I'd love to talk to these guys about how they put this together because, like you're saying, it's a complicated idea. I think they had to slow play it to get it across without it being like it's just like a weird brain dump. Mm-hmm. But it feels like, did they come up with the theme park thing first, the murders, the like the Victorianness of it? Like it's wild. It has like early George Saunders work was obsessed with theme parks. Mm-hmm. And this feels in that vein. And the art feels very much like Beatles, like Sergeant Pepper, or no, sorry, Yellow Submarine style art that there I think really works because it feels retro but not Victorian, like British looking back. It was a cool choice, surprising, and I think it really works.
Yeah, I mean, this is awesome. This is really impressive. Artistically, it's awesome. It's a very interesting story. I mean, what comes down to Steve Orlando is a great writer and, you know, is kicking serious butt. So, when you say, Steve, I'm showing up. Yeah, and then finally when you kind of get into the kind of meats and potatoes, the murdering and the slashing, if you will, very kind of cool, interesting stuff. And, yeah, so, I mean, this also, it went really long way around to kind of be like, hey, this guy just shoved a flag up this dude's ass. But I feel like it works within the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So does it work outside of the story as well, Pete, in your opinion?
yeah, I mean, you got to get it outside. You know what I mean? So everybody can see what you're talking about. But it was
the flag up the butt is sort of the meats and potatoes of the outside story.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what you're saying, right, Pete?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it was more of the, you know, parsley or the kind of, you know, accoutrement, if you will. But it's still a fun choice. It's a fun addition to any dish. You know what I mean?
Let me just try to boil down what you literally just said in that review. Murder, the murders and slashing are the meats and potatoes. Meats and potatoes of the story. And the flag up the going up a butt, which didn't happen.
Yeah, he did. He pulled the flag out of the. He's like,
I'd be very surprised if it's revealed the flag went in the anus. No, and they landed
said,
in
it
the
said wound. Around the colon. What does that mean? That means it's a nice way of saying it's he up this dude's ass.
No, he was slashed open.
There the was flag was put in the wound.
Yeah, in the wound.
Yeah, they said it was around his colon. And so
if you want to get it, I mean, if it's
technically, that means if you're going around.
Jack the Ripper, you think the Jack the Ripper character in this cut the guy open, starting at like his neck all the way down to his belly, and it was like, time to go up the butt with this flag.
Well, I think it's a statement piece. You know what I mean? It's a statement maybe about the flag.
So
we're
going
about.
To like Bed Bath & Beyond, the place you pick up your statement pieces. Is that what you're asking for?
Well, I think you can get butt flags at any, you know, gas station or, you know.
Oh, sure.
A lot of commemorative butt flags.
Yeah,
I get most of my statement pieces and gas stations. So yes,
yeah. Keep honking. The wife fell off. Some great or whatever.
Food at gas stations. You know what I mean? You go to the right one.
Yeah, you'd hot dog. You'd like an old hot dog. I can't wait for the reveal that that flag. He was originally called Jack the Butt Flagger, but they changed to Ripper. Well, that's historically
accurate. It's implied with Jack the Ripper. You know what I mean? You're ripping flags out of butts.
Yeah.
You're ripping the flags out.
That's where ripping a fart comes from, is it was originally ripping a flag out of butt.
People didn't fart before then.
Not in the Victorian era.
Not out loud. No, it was a secret.
It was all internal, and it came out their mouth.
That's the meat and potatoes. That's where
originally the race of white flag meant you was farting. You know what I mean? It wasn't mean giving up. It just I'm just ripping some farts away.
I've never heard all of us be nonsense at the same time. And I'll tell you what, I don't know how to get back on track. We just have to keep going.
Scare you? It's been going around in my head for like the past 5 minutes.
Yeah, Alex is like, how do I get back and get someone else to just be like, and that's what I think farts are. It's like, what?
Well, Godzilla. Monster piece leader, oh God, number Pete's, three.
Oh, I Pete's. Thought you were doing another take. Good.
Boy, if Pete's getting us back on track, we're in big trouble.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Godzilla's Monsterpiece Theater number 3. He did it.
Yes.
From IDW by Tom Scioli. This was my issue of the week. This book. What?
I called the first, bro. I called the first.
Alex has been...
Justin jumped on my absolute Wonder Woman, and now you're just trying to steal my...
I've been for this book since the beginning.
Yeah. He lifted his leg on it first, Pete.
That's true. If you haven't been reading it, it's not even fair to call it like relatively grounded, but it did this amazing job in the first issue of mashing together The Great Gatsby with Godzilla and making it feel thematically like The Great Gatsby. And then it's just gone, and I say this complimentarily, off a cliff since then, to the point that this last issue, Godzilla is in Transylvania. Dracula is trying to control him. The mummy has been freed from the pyramids. Duke New Godzilla's rampage. There's Wolfmen. And who is it that brings out a Nazi Frankenstein? Dr. Frankenstein.
The Time.
Yeah.
Dr. Frankenstein, yeah.
Dr. Frankenstein.
More Stay in the Times, don't
you? And I don't want to spoil it, but it ends up in a scene with a phrase that made me laugh so hard by the end of this book. It's great.
It's so much fun.
It's so fun. There's great jokes all over the place. Oh, Pete, you want to call dibs and go in second?
No, it's all right. I was just going to say that it's just artistically impressive. The themes that it can pull off and the stories that it is telling. There's layers to it. It's enjoyable on many levels. You can just turn your brain off, and there's giant fights that are fun. You know what I mean? It's really impressive.
Yeah. Just remember to turn your brain back on before you.
Oh, that's a good idea. Thanks for that.
Otherwise, you might be in trouble. I love that. Just there's so many great jokes in this, and it's weirdly like it accelerated in its pace and a number of jokes as the series went on. To the point, and there's a great end when it comes to Gatsby and Daisy in this that I thought was really funny. And the mummy scene you mentioned earlier, everyone's like, oh no, the mummy, whoever disturbs the tomb, the mummy will kill. And they're like, well, you know, it wasn't us. It was Godzilla. I thought that made me laugh so much.
Of jokes and action. It's really impressive.
Yeah. It's just a perfect bit of comic book madness, I would call it. Definitely pick it up. Nice. I assume it's coming out in trade at some point. If you didn't miss it, definitely pick it up. Great trade read. Here we go. Amazing Spider-Man number 66 from Marvel, written by Justina Ireland, art by Andrea Briccardo. And Justin's been looking forward to this issue for months because you know Spider-Man is so sad in here. So sad. And you love it when Spider-Man is sad,
right? Just mopey and sad, and he's giving up on life, and things are hard, and I'm Spider-Man.
Oh, don't be mean, because this issue is, like, way... For a cover of Black Cat and Spider-Man, like, really, like... getting after it. Like, that's a hot kissing.
You're putting a lot on that picture, because in actual, he was just sad and she kissed him once to cheer him
that's
up.
That's what I'm getting to. Yeah, like, yeah. This issue was such a, in that it's meant to be, like, such a bummer. And, like, this is a really interesting story. Like, the Zeb Wells era was such a, like, up and down, like, people's mileage for it is all over the place and interest in it. And now they're telling, like, a crushing Peter Parker's will story, which is, it's really different. It's really, it's almost like the reverse Dan Slott of Spider-Man takes. Wow,
pulling reverse Dan Slott.
Yeah, which is also a wrestling move. I can do it still. But this really is, I'm enjoying it, but I wish the issue was more about the cover. I wish the issue was the cover 22 times.
I got to say, by the way, just to give a little bit of the plot. So Spider-Man has been fighting these scions of Sidorak who challenge him in different ways. In the previous issue of this title, he was challenged by being shown the deaths of everybody he loved until he realized nothing matters on a long enough time scale. In the between, we got a 65 deaths issue that focused on Phil Coulson and showed him giving up. And here, he's just trying to understand why anybody keeps going, while Doctor Strange or the Scion tag him from a distance. And she's wondering how he was able to keep going so far, even farther than Doctor Strange was. So I got to say, of those three issues I just mentioned, this one I think was far and away the best. Yeah. I really felt the emotion of what Spider-Man was going through. And I think Justina Ireland really dug down nicely on what makes Spider-Man a hero and eventually is going to show him the light at the end of the tunnel. So I thought that was great. And to just touch on the kiss a little bit, I actually really thought it was very sweet. The idea that Black Cat was like, this is something to live for, is like love, you know, and not even like, I love you, Spider-Man, but just like a little bit of that. Like, that is why
it seemed like
going.
I'm trying to cheer you up kiss, which I thought was very sweet.
Yeah,
very nice.
I get those a lot from people I work with.
Oh, wow. I don't know if that's
legal.
Do
you think that's weird?
Yeah, I think that's weird. Yeah, I would.
Oh,
think
HR, you just mentioned it, Pete.
I think HR would have a field day with whatever job you're working at. But
need a little pick me up.
He's in HR. Is that a problem?
Yeah, that's not weird, right?
I think it is. I think you're abusing your power.
No, they're kissing him.
Yeah,
That's not helping. Okay, so first off, shitty cover.
This is our quagmire of the conversation.
And then this is just a sad Spider-Man who's given up on life, which, you know, this guy gets pushed and pushed. It's, you know, I like the human choice of saying, like, Spider-Man can't always be the most hopeful, and you know what I mean? But it's sad to see somebody you know and spent a lot of time with going through a tough time, you know what I mean? And you want to just kind of shake him and be like, hey, man, snap out of it. We need you to step up because the X-Men are filling in for him, you know, and, you know, that can't be good. But my favorite part about this whole thing was we got to see a picture of Jordan D. White in the back, and I miss that guy. He had a great laugh, and he was fun to be around. And you know,
Justin, you're a big fan of Spider-Man's girlfriend Shay. What did you think about the thing where she briefly met him in Times Square? And just to remind you, she's a nurse. That's one of her main characteristics. She was like, "Yeah, man,
one of her main characteristics,
right? One of her other main characteristics is sometimes she's in Times Square." And she is talking to Spider-Man, and he's like, how do you keep going when you deal with sadness? And she's like, yeah, man, I deal with that all the time with my patients. It's here's how I work through it. Anyway, see you later.
Yeah. And I'm going to say their relationship doesn't feel super strong.
Really?
It feels a little bit.
Really? Okay.
He's out here getting pick-me-up kisses, a Pete LePage term, from Black Cat on the side of a building. So, like, I don't know. I think are we out of the Shea era already? Shea eon?
I think we moved from the Shea era to Citi Field, if you ask me.
Yeah, good. That's a New York-centric reference.
Yeah, that's
people will explain it to you off camera.
What I was going
to
say,
Shea Stadium to Citi Field is what the Mets.
Did you read about that in one of your books?
I lived in the city for 22 years, you piece of shit.
He lived in Shea Stadium. He was the ball boy.
It was Mr. Bat Boy.
Yeah. Oh, man, what a dream job for Pete. What I was going to say about this comic is I think it's highlighting that Peter Parker's actual superpower is his humanity, which they touch on a bunch of times. That's a really cool idea. And like you were saying, the kiss with Black Cat was very sweet and sort of saying, like, you have to live for the moments. You can't be thinking about death all the time. And it's just sad to see Peter Parker have fallen this far, but I think it mm-hmm. makes for a better story.
Yeah.
Yeah,
to shout out something from David Lynch, who passed away, look for the donut, not the hole.
Yeah. Oh, deep, bro. Yeah, yeah I do like to see, you know, Peter go through ups and downs. It's just, it's hard to see him when he's down. It's hard to watch. And I think, it, you know, makes for interesting stories. But, I just can't believe I'm the only guy in this whole podcast who misses Jordan D. White. I think it's a little weird.
No, it just feels like not a part of this comic book.
It's in the issue. It's in this issue, man.
Sure. Yeah,
the letters.
We don't review the staples.
Maybe we should.
You're right.
Wow, nice.
Somebody physically puts them in every issue.
That's right.
Wither the stapler. Who's wielding?
The Staple Tron 5000.
Next week, I didn't put it down the credits this week, but next week I'll start reading the credits for Stapler. Not letterer or colorist, because fuck those guys, but
that's my Stapler.
100%. Detective Comics 1093 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Mikel Janin. In this issue, Batman continues to try to figure out who is killing the at-risk youth of Gotham City. He's teaming up with the Bat Family to find out. Meanwhile, somebody who looks exactly like that is giving him baby blood, and he can't put two and two together. No, I don't know. We talked about this in the last issue, and I'm still like, I should not be ahead of Batman on this mystery. That's all.
Yeah, he's got a blind spot for, you know, everyone's got a little blind spot when you're juicing on the side with your girlfriend. Mm-hmm. He's not able to put it together. We've all been
there. This is fun. The twists and turns of it. Fun kind of last page villain reveal action. I also really like the part where Batman wasn't taking shit from that dude and called him a small, small man, even though he was a lot bigger than Batman. That was pretty badass.
And I just want to disagree. I think this is a bad cover because on the cover we have Batman and this new villain are covered in fire, and that doesn't happen in the book, so bad cover.
Also, too soon, DC. You know what I mean? Fire on the cover. I mean, come on.
God. Justin, what did you think about this real quick?
I think Tom Taylor is great.
Justin.
We got to hurry. The montage of the different Bat Family members we get at the top is just really well-paced and covers a lot of ground really quickly. The art's excellent. It just feels like Tom Taylor continues to be at the top of his game. And I'm happy that it's pushing the story. Like, I like this new villain, like you were saying.
This is one Taylor that can weave any story. Moving on to the Patchwork Girl of Oz, number one from Image Comics by Otis Frampton. This is an adaptation of the book of the title from this lauded cartoonist. What do you guys think?
First off, fantastic cover really sets the vibe for what you're about to get into.
I thought this was bad because the Patchwork Girl of Oz is on the cover and she's not in it and there's not a cat on her.
But the hat dude is there, so what the fuck?
Yeah, but again, like with the Terminator cover, it needs to be exactly what you see on the cover in the book. You can't take any artistic license whatsoever.
Well, it seems like you're a little bit of a weird, holding on to a lot there.
I am.
Yeah, I thought the Patchwork Girl was a submarine in this. Is that not
weird.
The case?
Anyways, really, the real review of this is great. It's a lot of fun. Love the maps. Love the adventure. Going to Munchkin Land. This is all just good times and great story, and I'm looking forward to reading more of this.
I do find it strange that we don't get the titular character even mentioned in this first issue. But because I was like, where is she?
Building up to him.
Which one of them is the Patchwork Girl?
That's sort of what I thought, but I was like, 100%. I don't think any of them so far, but
it's charming.
Like a fun world. Yeah.
I'd love to find out more about this Oz place. Lawful number 7 for Boom Studios, written by Greg Pak, art by Diego Galindo. We are in the penultimate issue of the series, I believe. Oh, as our main character is finding out some essential truths about the world, dealing with the witch who put a curse on them that may not, in fact,
be a curse.
Hey, yeah.
But I mentioned this on the live show, but I continue to be really impressed with this book in terms of how Greg is dealing with what makes somebody good and what makes us strive to be good. Is it society? Is it something inside of us? Is it something outside of us? That's what he's exploring here through this big fantasy premise. And it's even 7 issues in, it continues to really drive that home in a very nice way.
Yeah, I've also been enjoying this. This issue had such last issue energy. I was surprised when we got to the end and there's a whole other issue. But that's not a knock, because this issue is action-packed, great like battle and confrontation sequence. A lot of great back and forth. There's big ideas in this book that are on display alongside all of this great action. Really excited to see what the next issue is going, where it's going to take us.
Yeah, I first off, that Greg Pak guy, I mean, holy crap, that guy can write a story. Yeah, and it's also a fun moment where it's like, you know, why are you looking at this as a curse? You know what I mean? Like, you got monster powers, bro. How many people would kill to have wings and be able to fly around? You know what I mean? Like, why is that a curse and shit? Great ideas, amazing action, fantastic art. Why wouldn't you be reading this book? You know what I mean?
Let's move on, talk about Dr. Doom and Rocket Raccoon, number one from Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Will Robeson. This is the first in a series of one-shots that JMS is doing with what he considers weird team-ups. Here, Dr. Doom is trying to solve a problem, and only Rocket Raccoon could help him build his machine. You guys were both laughing, having a good time there, so what do you think?
I mean, I was like, J. Michael Straczynski doing these characters, I was like, this is such a strange idea. And then I enjoyed this. The tone is very strange of this comic as well. It's like high philosophy, like Doom being Doom, but there's a lot of jokes in here. There's like a extended who's on first sequence in this book that I just was shocked by. While at the same time, Dr. Doom is investigating the meaning of life, and you know, this is a very small spoiler, but the end reveal is that all of reality is built on Dr. Doom, essentially, which I thought was very strange. But there's a resonance there that I thought, I was surprised this book got there, given what it was.
Yeah, I think, first off, silly title rhyming. And I thought, this is a kind of a weird, odd couple to put these two together. I don't know if I want to see them together.
Do you talk about Dr. Doom and Rocket Raccoon?
Yes.
Yeah. Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, because if you want it to rhyme, you have to say that. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So I just think that I was surprised how much hanging out they were doing. You know what I mean? I was like kind of pulled back a little bit by it. But you find out the answers to the universe, which is deep and always nice. I mean, now we don't have to go on like a kind of crazy adventure or climb the mountain to know the answer. It's given to you in this book. So why wouldn't you want to know the secrets to the universe? Buy this book and you'll know the answer.
There you go. Green Arrow, number 20 from DC Comics, written by Chris Condon, art by Montos. Green Arrow continues to investigate the freshwater killer. Thought they caught her in the last issue, but maybe they didn't. Maybe he or she is still out there somewhere. I continue to really enjoy the tone that Chris Condon and Montos are bringing here. There's a very offhand nature to their Green Arrow that's very impressive, that builds up the tension until the end of the issue. There's some really good conversation stuff happening with Green Arrow and Black Canary here. That is, I mean, it's not very delayed. I think they're only like 3 issues in, but it's nice to see them finally getting back to that as well. Justin, you're nodding your head yes. What did you think?
I also really like this. The way we're getting back to Green Arrow's like protest, like going after corporation roots, I think is really smart. I like the way the villain or the threat is being identified here. And I think it's going to be a really interesting twist that we don't quite get in this issue. Getting next, I think the art is really nice, matches the tone of the writing in a great way. really enjoying this. And I'm going to turn it over to Pete, who has a grudge against Green Arrow. But when he's presented with a good art and good writing in a comic, how could you hate it?
Yeah, well, so first off,
could you hate it?
Well, first off, exciting news, because it seems like, and spoilers, I'm sorry if you didn't read this issue yet, but it seems like Ollie's about to get murdered. So I'm very excited for this to all go down. And hopefully by the next issue, we won't have to deal with this dude anymore, which would be great news. But awesome art.
I do have one bone to pick with the issue.
Oh, sure.
There's a sequence where Ollie is on the phone with Black Canary. And she's mm-hmm. fighting. He's, like, having coffee. And yep. she's in the middle of a fight. She's about to do her textbook scream.
Yep.
And she says, mute the phone for a second. And he presses mute. But that wouldn't mute her. That would only mute him. Right?
Yeah, I mean, technically you're correct.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. So that's not how phones work. And I was really surprised by that.
Maybe I thought she was talking to Siri. I mean, she was like, hey, mute the phone, Siri. You know what I mean? So that way she muted on
Would be pretty funny if he was like, okay, mute, and then starts bleeding on his ear.
Well, then she can't hear him talk.
Yeah.
Classic but mute. But
great
for
catch, Justin.
Hey, you know, I ride the mute button in every aspect of my life. So, like, I know how it works. But I thought that was very fun.
And famously, Bob Uecker did the same. Rest in peace.
Great. What? Thanks for bringing that up. Deadly Tales of the Gunslinger Spawn, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Jimmy Pabiati, art by Patrick Reynolds. We're continuing to explore the origin of the man with the tall hat as he rolls into town and fights some supernatural baddies. Yeah, like with the first issue, this brings on some gross supernatural horror stuff in a Western setting, which is perfect for this creative team.
Well said.
I really like the art of this book. I like all of it except for when he puts the hat on. And then I'm like, that's dumb. And that's a lot. He does put the hat on a lot.
Of like the Wild West is you got to have kind of like a cowboy hat. That's kind of like a
weird hat. It's very tall.
That hat is beyond cowboy. This isn't a cowboy hat. But
it's a Spawn version of a cowboy hat.
It's like if Abraham Lincoln's hat. Like,
hey, Justin, if someone said, hey, your hat's dumb, you know what I mean? You got to stop wearing it. You'd be like, no, this hat is something that I wear. I feel comfortable in. This is a part of me. This is my look. You know what I mean? Yeah. So don't come at the gunslinger like that. He likes that hat. He's going to rock it.
For a man who takes himself very seriously, it's a very goofy hat to wear. But he also walked around the hot, dusty West in spandex, so that's weird too.
Yeah. So, yeah,
I just wonder what some people led suffer to the decision there from Todd McFarlane, because I feel like it's such an obvious thing for him to just give him like a classic cowboy hat. So it's a very purposeful
decision. But
doesn't
feel Spawn.
Like, nope.
That black hat feels like a old timey Spawn Western look. I feel like.
Did he maybe get hit on the head with like an anvil and that hat is like sticking up
classic.
Really high?
Classic Looney Tunes. I think this is fun. You know, that Jimmy Pagliotti guy's a great writer. He's got a fun sense of humor. So this kind of, you know, goes into this, lack of a better word, whorehouse. And then the reveal at the end is fun. So I think that's an exciting for what's...
Bordello, Pete?
Yeah,
that's what they call it at the end. Yes.
Yeah, and so then the reveal is they're all vampires and they're going to attack him. So hopefully he can make it out of there alive.
Fun from Dusk Till Dawn issue coming up next.
There we go.
There you go. Let's move to another fun book, The Toxic Avenger, number 4 from Ahoy Comics, written by Matt Boris, art by Fred Harper. In this issue, the Toxic Avenger has met his match in the form of another toxie in town as the
bully.
A bully. I continue to really enjoy this book. I think it's satirical in the way that Ahoy Comics does so well. The art is great. I like the fact that they've got some really gross visuals in here that straddle the line between gross and endearing, particularly for Toxie in specific. I'm having a good time.
Yeah, I agree. The art really fits this book in the horror / comedy. It really matches the original movies as well in a way. So that's really fun. And hard to pull off.
Yeah, I'm impressed with what the harpsichord is doing here artistically. It's a kind of a fun take
Fred
on
Harper.
Yeah, Fred Harper, the harpsichord. We all know that. Mm-hmm. I just feel that it adds a lightness, a funniness to this in the art, which I think is great for the humor of this book. Sometimes if you go too gross with the character, you lose some of the kind of fun B-movie kind of vibe that it has.
And B-movie!
I think this does a great job of kind of like the artistic style capturing some of the lightness and the humor to it to really kind of give it a nice vibe. And also fun line, kill them bug-eyed bitches. I mean, that's just fun stuff.
Yeah. If I may summarize, the harpsichord is super tight nanners. That's what hoppies.
Oh, nice. Well done.
Wolverine Revenge, number 4 for Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Greg Capullo. And I have a bone to pick with you guys because in the first issue I was like, hey, this is kind of like Jonathan Hickman and Greg Capullo doing their own riff on Old Man Logan. You guys were like, absolutely not. What are you talking about?
Dumb.
Stupid. Idea. You stupid idiot. Get out of here. Never do
Alex,
a show.
Alex, pull the blanket off your lap and over your head and go to bed because you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then here we are at the fourth issue with a old bearded Logan who was straight up doing an Old Man Logan to the point that everybody's kids are getting involved. So I guess my review of this book was I was right.
No, you're not. This is an old man.
Put that on the cover. Put that on the cover editorial.
I guess I'll go first. But yeah, this is not Old Man Logan.
I have nothing else to say.
Okay, I don't think this is Old Man Logan. It's an old Logan.
Oh, so he's not a man?
Oh, wow. This isn't the same story. It just happens to be also include an older Logan. I think Greg does an amazing job in the art, and every time he's on Wolverine, I am showing up for it. And I'm going to ignore my note that says comparing it to Old Man Logan here, which I'm just now realizing.
Oh, man, what a win for Alex. You got Pete's notes.
Sabretooth stuff is fun, and, yeah,
did your old man Logan do this, Alex?
Yeah.
Barf all over the place, probably. Yeah. I can see that.
Barf-o-rama. He must have had too many jalapenos.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Wolverine, big barfs. I mean, this is fun. From a Jonathan Hickman, it just doesn't feel like a Jonathan Hickman story, but it feels like a good story, just like Wolverine. Mm-hmm. It's close to Old Man Logan, but it's Wolverine trying to rebuild society, wearing Western clothes for some reason, and barfing.
And you're walking the earth. Normal-sized hat.
Yeah.
When you're walking the earth, you need some hat, some protection from the sun.
You need some hat. You need a hat.
I also think it's fun.
Hey, mister, I want a hat. You have a hat? I need hat. Yeah. I'm walking Earth. I want
hat. By the way, you guys watched it on HBO. When is The Hats of Us coming back? That's one of my favorite shows.
Oh, yeah.
Hat too big. Gunslinger spawn. No. I want a hat.
Anyways, regular hat. Fun Creed stuff in the Professor X floating kind of wheelchair situation there.
It is a weird thing that's happening, but we're Wolverine. This is one of the few issues of Wolverine Revenge when he's not getting revenge, but I think he's going to get a lot of revenge. Buddy.
Yeah, it's going to be coming
out. Well, some other people are trying to get revenge on him, so we'll see what happens with that final revenge of the last issue. Justice League Unlimited, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Dan Mora. In this issue, the rainforests are under attack by new villain organization Inferno. Finding out a little bit more about that, as well as looping back to the Airwave storyline. Last we left that in issue 1, Airwave said, I'm going to kill the Justice League. Which he has not done as of yet, but I guess we'll see what happens. And this ends on a very big, shocking moment. So I like the big swings this title is taking so far.
Agreed. And I just think there's no one else who could write this comic besides Mark Waid. Like, where there's just so much happening, there's so many. It feels like if you want Justice League Unlimited, you need this much action packed into it. And Mark Waid is crushing that. So really fun stuff. The art's great as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be the guy to spoil it, but yeah, that's a real oh shit moment there at the end. So this is making fun choices and yeah, fantastic art. Yeah, it's got a great feel and vibe to it, so this is very enjoyable.
Do you think Aquaman likes being in the swamp? Because technically it's water, but it's like yucky.
I don't know if likes is the right word, but I
think it just likes being included, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, like even if it's like ankle high water, he's like, this is my domain.
This counts.
I hear it.
This counts.
There's fish somewhere. It's always fish o'clock somewhere, says Aquaman.
Can he talk to frogs? Can he talk to frogs?
Because
they're amphibious.
Yeah, yeah, tadpoles, but as soon as they grow up, yeah, they can't talk.
He's like, loses touch with them? That's sad.
Yeah.
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 It's really sad. World and Alex, I feel like you want to move on, but I have more questions about this Aquaman stuff.
World Tree number 12 from Image Comics, written by James Todd IV, art by Fernando Blanco. Throughout the series, we've been following a naked lady who murders people because the internet told her to do so. In this issue, we are flashing back. So if you have ever wondered how ladies become naked, you're going to find out in the next couple of issues. That's all I got.
This issue is so good. It's great. This book has been – we've had a bit of a gap here for the past couple months, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So it was great to see it back in the stack this week. And, you know, scary that it – like it – it really, this issue really crystallizes the, like, the internet is bad for certain reasons. And it, this issue is putting that out there in a great way through the eyes of this teenager.
Yeah, this one girl doesn't really know what's going on. And then it's like, whatever you do, don't go to the internet. And then, of course, she does. But, oh, man. Yeah, will she ever be the same again?
Well, in all seriousness, bouncing off what you were saying, Justin, this... there's a lot of complicated stuff going on in this book, but this simplified it down to a place where I really understood the emotional thrust of where they were coming from, because I'm sure you guys remember too, but when the internet was first popping up, I very clearly remember my brother and I playing around on it at like CompuServe or something, and my mom coming in and be like, you can't go on there. It's too dangerous to go on there. We're like, okay, I think we're going to be fine. Don't worry about it. And we were, except for my brother who was kidnapped. But the...
it was a classic
that
van.
Sounds,
get in the van,
that sounds
I got
vaguely
candy.
Real, so don't know.
No, it wasn't.
It'd be hard to kidnap someone over the internet, I think.
Yes, exactly. That's what she was worried about happening, though. But I think, like, this is going back to that fear of the beginning of the internet. And
P-H-E-R.
I appreciate that in terms of... laying that out there so when we get back to the main present timeline of the title or jumping ahead, we'll have more of that emotional grounding.
Yeah.
I mean, the internet is scary. There's no question about it. But, yeah.
I
mean,
I have horrible news for both of you. We're on it right now.
What? Teenage Mutant Ninja... have you seen my brother? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Night Watcher number 5 from IDW, written by Judy Ba, art by Pharaoh Pei. In this issue, Jenica is taking on a giant bear man,
bear man.
And we finally get back to what is going on with her armor in a really kind of terrifying way.
Cool way.
Yeah.
That is very effective. I really like the series a lot. I like the issue by issue approach that Judy Ba is taking here. Good stuff.
Jenica, one of my favorite turtles. So I'm on board for this. And it's the armor stuff is strange, but it's this issue especially really popped.
Yeah, this is a blast. You know, there's some kind of real sad moments, but I love the intense story. I love what's going on and the kind of oh shit power reveal that the Night Watcher have is it's really impressive. And I thought she was in trouble with that giant bear man.
Uncanny X-Men number 9 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by Andre Bresson. In this issue, after the end of the crossover, the kids, the outliers that the X-Men are taking care of, get sent to a mall date by Jubilee, and it goes kind of horribly wrong when new dog sentinels attack them, leading to a tragedy at the end. Justin, like we were talking about on the live show, you've been back and forth about this title. Do you think things got back on track in this one, or are they even further off track?
Well, I'll tell you what. I had talked about in the first couple issues this being like the heart and soul, like, of the X-Men with Rogue, Gambit, where it was like we were sitting in the characters and letting them like be a team, be friends, be lovers in the case of Rogue and Gambit. Really love that. Now it's shifted to almost the vibe of like X-Men 92, like an X-Men 92 mm-hmm. animated episode where it's like the characters are doing stuff. We're not
Let's
really
kill them
in,
all.
There's not as much interiority as it used to be. It feels like, hey, we're going to go do this thing. And then like, uh-oh, here's the bad guys coming and bad stuff's about to happen. So it just feels like it's gotten a little bit thinner. It's not to say that all that work that came in the first couple issues isn't still there. It's just doing something else now. It's a little more popcorn-y.
Yeah, don't be stressed. And we got the Bresson on this. And the art is fantastic. And, you know, it's the classic X-Men go to the mall, and it's never a good idea, which is sad because malls are great. But
wow, pro-mall. Strong stance in this year.
Yeah,
not
old guy taking
much.
A, you know, it's a place to speed walk, you know what I mean?
You know where else you can do that? Literally anywhere.
Yeah, I'm just, anyways.
Anywhere.
Yeah, but, yeah, those evil robot dogs are scary. But yeah, I'm enjoying this, so I'm going to keep checking it out.
Little Batman, month one, number three from DC Comics, written by Morgan Evans, art by John McKell. We are continuing the story spinning out of the Prime Video animated movie with Damian trying to rescue Bruce Wayne before Scarecrow does something very bad, even though Bruce Wayne, of course, is pretty much fine. I really love this book. The art in particular is absolutely adorable
so
throughout. This is just a great, like, he's a tiny little speck of Damian Wayne, little Batman. It's very cute. And the story is adorable, too. I love the scene with the Joker is really good. All the stuff that's going on with Bruce Wayne being captured by Scarecrow is great. I'm just having a very good time.
Yes, I agree. It's very fun. The two things I'll shout out, the full splash page of Damian skitching on the back of a taxi on the skateboard is so good. That's definitely frameable. And then my other favorite thing is Alfred's withered hot dog nose. Like, he's got just a long, wrinkly
How
hot dog
dare
nose.
You.
The kind of thing
you
that people would
you
eat
get
at a gas
old.
Station.
When you get old and get a hot dog nose, dude, we're going to be laughing at you,
I'm
bro.
Not, I think it's fun. I'm highlighting it. I can't wait till I get a hot dog nose.
Yeah, I agree with you. The art is absolutely fantastic. Brings you into this world so nicely. It's a blast. And also just the fun that this book is having. You know, I love the part where the villains are like, how could Batman just disappear? Doesn't he care? Just hysterical. Just absolutely hysterical. They've captured Bruce Wayne and are upset that Batman hasn't showed up yet. That's just fun. They're just having a blast.
Fantastic Four, number 28 from Marvel, written by
cool
Ryan
cover.
North, art by Stephen Cummings. In this issue, Reed is trying to grapple with the fact that something is going on with Dr. Doom, and he just can't wrap his brain around magic. So Sue suggests they go to the Black Knight to figure it out, leading to some twists and turns and surprises. Now, I do want to talk about this issue, but I do also want to bring up there was a discussion going on. Not on our Patreon Slack, because we're not on Slack anymore, but our Patreon Discord. We're on Discord now. It's true, Pete.
Join us, Pete.
But there was a great discussion going on about Fantastic Four, with some people saying they really love the series, other people saying it leaves them feeling cold. So I was curious, using this issue as an example, since I think all three of us like it, what is working for you about this series? Just to try to potentially sell it to people who it is not working for.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff that's working for this issue is actually sort of a bad example of that because we're setting up for the new One World Under Doom. So it does feel like this book has to work in a certain direction. Every other issue leading up to this basically has been just a great standalone story, often featuring two or three of the different Fantastic Four members. Doing really interesting, actually based in science, real science stuff that I thought was just, again, another writing challenge to weave that into a story. And it's been great. This issue is good, I think, too. The Doom and, like, the Black Knight of it, he was behaving so strangely throughout this whole issue.
Yeah.
The thing that is funny to me is in the Ultimate Universe, we have Reed Richards is hidden behind a dome, an energy dome, doing something fucked up, being Doom, essentially. Now, in the regular Marvel Universe, Doom's been hiding behind a dome, doing a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, what? That's very strange that that's happening at the same time.
Yeah. I just want to say it's a fantastic cover. But this,
I just want to say it's a fantastic four. End of review.
Oh, great. But this is what drives me nuts about the Fantastic Four, is that Reed Richards is supposed to be so smart, but, like, this is your first time? Like, when you know somebody and they're acting weird, like, have some fucking common sense, bro. It just... sometimes when there are smart people doing dumb things, it drives me nuts. And I know that there's different kinds of smarts. There's street smarts and there's other kinds of things. But supposedly you've been on a lot of adventures. And it just is a little bit like, come on, bro. But other than that, I like the swings that it's taking. But they are kind of pulling a Samurai Jack in this, where it's like, you know, they get thrown into a world where Doom is now the kind of ruler. You know, whatevs. Fantastic Four has never kind of been my favorite, so continues to not be my favorite. Okay, so,
all right. Maybe my premise in terms of saying we all like this was a little flawed. I'll talk about it, though.
Yeah.
I really like this issue. I did like the twists and turns here. I do think Reed being out of his element with magic and eventually reaching a sort of emotional catharsis there was nicely done. It also, as a prelude to One World Under Doom, really doubled down on the danger inherent there in a way that I have not been getting from any of the other titles that Doom has been showing up in. So I thought that was nicely done. Generally speaking about this book, I would imagine, without looking back at that conversation in the Discord, but I would imagine that part of it is that this is not like everything you know is about to change about the Fantastic Four. This is the most important thing you ever read about the Fantastic Four. Instead, it's using them as an ongoing cast for an anthology book that is more Amazing Stories style, or sometimes Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, etc. And they are the constant characters who show up in this thing. And I love that. I love that is it feels unlike anything else, particularly coming out from Marvel, but also just comics in general, where the push is always setting up One World Under Doom or the next big event or going forward to that, versus just what is a good story with these characters that we know very well. And, you know, we could play off of their emotional strengths and weaknesses in a certain way without, you know, breaking them, without being like one of them is going to die, etc. We're getting there in this event that's going to happen. You're going to get that if that's what you're missing. But so far we've had about 27 issues of just done in one or done in two adventures that present a premise, present the Fantastic Four, who we know, and then have them get out of the situation in a fun way or a sad way.
One thing I wanted to highlight, I think that's all spot on, but it's funny to me in this issue and in the Rocket Raccoon and Dr. Doom, Rocket Raccoon and Dr. Doom, that Doom is just magic guy now. He's just great at magic.
And well, I was Sorcerer like, Supreme, dude. He's going to be a little magic
doc. Yeah, but Dr. Doom's whole thing was, I'm good at science. And in this, in the Rocket book, Rocket Raccoon is like, your science sucks. And dude, I guess, and it's just funny to me that Dr. Doom is like killer at magic. Best magician in the world, right up there with Doctor Strange. Now he's sort of bad at science, but it doesn't matter because he just is good at spells. It's weird.
The I'm spells just saying, thing, if I don't... you become Sorcerer Supreme, you're going to try to lean into the magic. You're going to try to, you know, bone up on the old spellies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the old spellies. Two thoughts in opposite directions there. One, I don't remember where it started, but the Doctor Doom as both science and magic guy has been going on for decades now, I think.
Yeah,
like, wow. Once they decided, wait a second, we should connect him back to his roots with his mother. versus yeah. just have him be like anti-Reed Richards.
Was that a Hickman thing?
I want to say it was, but it feels like it might have even been before that. I'm not yeah. sure.
Because I remember it being like that was – he was like, how can I beat Reed Richards? I can't beat him at science. I'm going to turn to magic. And that was a cool idea because it felt like he was yeah. betraying his science because mm-hmm. he failed too much. Cool.
It feels like a villain move. I like it.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Just having him as the magic guy doesn't necessarily work for me. The other thing that I wanted to say, not apropos of this issue, but Doctor Strange shows up several times in the issues of the stack. And every time he's always like, well, I'm not Sorcerer Supreme anymore. However, I can do literally the same things that I did before.
Yeah, I don't get the Doctor Strange's positioning. I mean, it feels like everyone just in, because he's not a main character. Like, he's in the Spider-Man book. He's around. He's just doing his normal stuff. But I think continuity-wise, he has to be like, but it's really hard for me to astral project because I'm not Sorcerer Supreme anymore. It's really requiring.
Yeah, I can do all these spells, but it's hard.
But I mean, when you're known for something for so long and then it's taken away from you, you're going to bring it up. You know what I mean?
The other thing, I thought Sorcerer Supreme was more like a title that you are just like, hey, congrats, you won. You're pretty good. You're the best.
It's like a black belt.
Yeah. But it's not, it seems like now it's like there's a lot of power associated with it. And I never considered it that way. Mm-hmm. It was much more like, Doctor Strange is so good at magic.
You get your magic amped up, dude. You know what I mean? Plus you get the eye of.
Based on what? The Eye of Agamotto?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think if anything, there's the whole thing that Doom talks about in this issue where like now he's basically like the king of magic, right? So he has all of these conversations that he's having with otherworldly beings and he has access to other knowledge going on there. I guess that's what they're riffing off of, but they're definitely playing it as a power thing. And I agree with you. That was not my impression at any point.
And let me also say about magic, isn't it just saying the words?
Like, how dare you?
What do you lose? What skill did Doctor Strange lose? He's not. God, he lost. Dude. He can't roll his R's.
That's just ridiculous. It's a ridiculous statement.
Okay, I guess magic's different.
Pete is pro Doctor Strange or anti? I honestly can't tell.
Come on, man. Doctor Strange always talks about how much it takes to do magic and how much it takes out of him.
There's
to do
a price
magic.
To be paid. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So you saying that just like all of a sudden you forgot all the comics that you've read before this conversation?
You can still say it.
This is the first comic I ever read.
Yeah. Congratulations. Welcome to the world.
What a way to start. It can still be hard, but like, it's still just like tiring, right?
You know what's not hard or tiring is Hyde Street.
Well, Pete's done. Wow. Hyde Street number 3 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Ivan Rice. In this issue, Pranky is really trying to teach Mr. X-Ray a lesson about how to claim souls on Hyde Street thanks to a vicious Santa Claus.
Evil Santa Claus.
Evil Santa Claus. Not a real evil Santa Claus, but a robber who dresses up as Santa Claus.
Yeah, fake Santa Claus.
Fake Santa Claus.
Climbs down chimneys.
There you go. And by the end, we've been introduced to another denizen of Hyde Street. I think we've been pleasantly surprised by the series so far. Does it keep up that streak in issue number 3?
It's very funny to me how much this series is about these two soul monster people just bickering and being like after each other. I think it works. It makes it just, it felt like this is going to be a horror anthology. Like, look at this tale of this thing gone wrong, and getting revenge on them. And it adds a whole nother element of these guys being like, well, you know what? I'm going to go do this. It's sort of, it's funny and just not what I expected, but I am enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Pranky's keeping score, you know what I mean? And he's looking for souls, and he needs to get off Hyde Street. So he's got a plan, and I appreciate him sharing it with us. Yeah, this is fun. This is a, you know, we continue to learn more about Hyde Street and more about these characters, and I like the stuff we get about Mr. X and kind of the letters page backup stuff. So that's awesome to kind of learn that stuff. But yeah, this is a crazy premise, really creative and fun. I love the setup of this. And then we just, you know, we kind of now get the introduction of this game of like collecting souls, and we get this new character who kind of like turns somebody around, which I didn't think was possible on Hyde Street. I thought it was all bad and everybody was all gone, but turns out not the case, which is a nice, fun twist. There's some hope. So, yeah, it's not all evil and monsters. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, I'm just artistically, creatively very impressed with this book and the story that it's telling.
Black Hammer, Spiral City, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Teddy Christensen. We're getting a number of stories going as usual for this title, including Inspector and Sector getting the shit kicked out of him.
Oh, man.
Sorry, man. And brutal. I'm forgetting the name of the big beefy guy who's now doing crime again.
Let's just call him Beef.
Beef. Yeah. I think his name is Meats and Potatoes.
Oh, boy. You sure it's not Parson?
And there's a third story about a pop star who has run into some tough times. Justin, you shouted this one out on the live show. What'd you think about this ish?
I just love this world. Like, I think the fact Jeff Lemire just continues to commit to this. Jeff Lemire doing a lot of other work, but just you don't expect a sort of super team analog series to be this creative and this continually excellent, and I think this book is that.
Yeah, I mean, this first off, like the start of this book is awesome. It's almost like a child's story gone wrong type of beginning, just the artistically the way it starts, which is very interesting. But it's heartbreaking what happens in Inspector and Sector here. And then we get this kind of princess character. And I wrote down like a goon type character. But, yeah, we can call him the Beef. So, yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. And I just think this is solid storytelling, amazing art, a little bit upsetting. But I'm still enjoying this and having a great time.
This issue in particular reminded me a lot of the Tom King book Danger Street, just in terms of about everybody, about like princesses and kings and royalty. And like Pete was saying, the very storybook nature of it. But Teddy Christensen's art is entirely unlike, I think that was Jorge Fornes on that book. Really always a good time with the bold Black Hammer. Iron Man number 4 from Marvel, written by Spencer Ackerman, art by Javier Pina. In this issue, Iron Man and Riri Williams are trying to figure out what is going on with his armor and what Ironmonger did to it. So they enlist the help of the Scarlet Witch.
What's she doing there?
I don't know.
Hey, she got a shout out for her new kind of gig. You know, that was fun.
Mm-hmm. You got to see Darcy. You've got to be happy.
You've got to be happy about Darcy.
Hey, the cavalry shows up. I was losing my shit over the cavalry. This is a fun ish, man.
It's crazy in this year, 2025, this Iron Man comic is making a big deal of a character from the S.H.I.E.L.D. television show.
Hell yeah. Plus a lot of in and out jokes, which is great.
Yeah, you mean jokes? Sex?
I don't think they were jokes. They were just talking about how in and out was good.
Yeah.
In-N-Out, the hamburger joint.
Yeah, they did the wild style bit. I thought that was funny.
I call sex In-N-Out.
Oh, okay. And you do it animal. You have to ask animal style. Because,
only, in yeah. only in certain states. Only in certain states.
Special menu item.
The cavalry, I don't know.
Many questions asked, but I'm not going to.
You save them. Write me a letter, a handwritten letter, please.
Okay.
The cavalry of it all, like, I don't know if this reminds me of Void Rivals, and they're like, look, another Transformer. I'm like, look, a character that you don't know, really. And I'm like, okay.
Come on, you don't know the cavalry?
She has been in the past couple of issues, but they do end with a character where I'm like, huh? I don't know who this is. And on the last page?
Oh, come yes. on.
Oh, you mean Lucia von Bardas?
Yeah.
three question marks when she steps out?
Yeah. Sorry, I do not.
No.
And I don't know. I just loved the previous run and all the White Queen stuff. Mm-hmm. So this doesn't have its footing yet for me.
I agree. Metamorpho. I disagree.
I think it's doing some fun things. And, you know, just because it doesn't have the White Queen doesn't mean it's not enjoyable.
Name one fun thing it's doing.
The cavalry is fun.
There you go.
Oh, okay. Got ya.
Oh. Metamorpho, the Element Man, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Steve Lieber. In this issue, Metamorpho and Sapphire Stagg reach a critical breaking point in their relationship. due to her machinations involving a rival singer who turns out to be a robot. This feels very Madman, the Mike Allred title to me.
Madman.
I thought you were talking about Mad Men.
No, not Mad Men. Mad Man, which I like. Period.
Yeah.
Thank you for the punctuation.
No problem. I thought the art was amazing. A lot of weird stuff going on here.
Yeah, I think the Madman comparison is apt. Like,
I'm sorry, did you say Mad Men?
Huh? I said Mad Men, the cannabis store in L.A.
Smart. Smoke them if you got them.
Is apt and it is fun, and I like the problem solving and the superhero arcs here are so much like, now we're going to turn into this dust, and we get a lot of like talking about it, which is fun and it feels on brand for this.
Mystique, number 4 from Marvel by Declan Shalvey.
Cool cover.
In this issue, Mystique and Nick Fury are growing ever closer as Mystique is on the hunt for Destiny, and Nick Fury is trying to figure out what she wants, which I believe is Destiny, but I guess we'll find out if there's something else there. Great action in this issue, great twists and turns as usual, and some, as always, excellent Declan Shalvey art.
Yeah, really like the Declan Shalvey art. Alex, you were really high on this.
Yes.
Are you still as high?
Yeah, are you still?
I'm high.
How high are you?
I'm like one of those guys that shops at MedMen. Is that what you said? Okay.
Yep.
No, I think like the first issue was really strong. We're now at the point where I'm not screaming at this issue or anything like that. I'm not like, oh shit, here we go. But there's a great twist at the end. The action is still really clean and impressive. There's some brutal scenes with Mystique in here. A lot of this now depends on how this all wraps up next issue in terms of what the revelations are and what the emotional places that we land for Mystique, because to crib from you, Justin, we're not in her head at all. We don't know what she's thinking or what she wants exactly. So,
well, she seems to say a lot, I want Destiny back.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's probably something else going on there. So curious to see where we land at the end of the series.
Well, and it's interesting. I feel like I like her new power set less. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not doing any of her subterfuge. When this comic started, I thought it was going to be, like, very, like, spy noir. Like, you never know who's doing what and who's who. And instead, this issue was just, like, a straight-up battle. She's never in disguise. She's just running around using other superheroes, other ex-mutants' powers when she can. Yeah, but it changes. The character's just completely different from what she used to be. And maybe that's the point. Maybe it is like this is a vengeance. She's on a scorched earth campaign. But I don't know. Not what I expected.
Yeah, I mean, Mystique is tricky like that. You know what I mean? She's a lot of people. And so it's tough to kind of, this is definitely a Mystique.
She's a lot of people.
But if you ask me the same question of how high I am, I'm not as high as I used to be. You know what I mean? I'm not ripping milky tubes or anything, but I do still think that this is fun. You know what I mean? This is still a fun comic. And I, like Alex said, I really agree that the twists and turns are enjoyable and it's amazing art. But things have calmed down a little bit in this ish, so I'm excited to see what's going to happen next. It'll probably get me back right up to being high
to Milky Tube.
Yeah.
So on the scale, it's like Milky Tube's pretty high, and like the lower one to be like.
Dude, if you're fucking ripping Milky Tubes, bro, you're going to be high as fuck, bro.
Talking about like a handmade apple bowl is like the lower end of the.
Yeah, dude. Come on, dude. You can't rip a fucking
you bowl can't like rip
a
out mil- of it.
Yeah, I mean, a Milky Tube's a different, it's a completely different situation.
Yeah. Milky Tube.
Yeah, I'm not gonna ask. I know what that is.
I
will say
Justin's
it is
like
Pete's saying
I can probably
things.
Figure it out. I can probably figure it out from context, I think.
Great. I think this is fun.
And you know what? I would say you should try, but honestly don't know if you're gonna land it. I don't know if you're gonna land that plane.
So no, I'm not
going to
do it.
Yeah, good. I see you actually wanted to do it.
Through each other in the next issue.
What?
Why don't we live vicariously through each other?
Your transition's
in the next
not
issue?
Working.
Yeah.
Well, from one character who turns into other people to another character who other people turn into, Vicarious number 4 from Boom Studios, written by Ryan Parrott, art by Eleonora Carlini. In this world, there are things called proxies where people can jump into other people's brains and kind of ride along as they go for paid experiences. Following one proxy who we finally find out the origin of in this issue, exactly what he did and how bad it was. And man, I love how dark this series is going. It definitely hinted at it in the first couple of issues, but they really take the lid off here and reveal everything. And it's great. It's very twisted and fun to read.
Twisted, the original Parrott head, Alex Zalbin, comes out back in his boy, Ryan Parrott. This is fun, but I'm
ripping milky tubes all over the place.
Oh man, yeah. That's twisted, bro.
It really
bro.
Flows when you say it, Alex. Too.
Thanks, man.
Way that this, I want this. I guess this is a me thing, I think, but we didn't really get to ever see much of the Vicarious stuff in action. It's been talking about it, but not doing it. And I guess I want more of that in this book. And I just don't, that's not what this book is about.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll get some of that more, but I can understand why you're saying that. I feel like this is a badass issue, though. You know, kid stands up for himself here, tells his dad off, you know, which I'm sure you guys don't appreciate, but, you know, starts kicking butt. And, you know, I feel like this is great art, great story, very much enjoying this issue.
Archie is Mr. Justice, number 2 from Archie Comics, written by Amanda Dibarrett, art by Brent Schoonover. This is a slightly more serious take on what if the Archie gang was superheroes. Here we're finding out about Veronica's origin as the visionary. Justin, you're a big Archie guy. How'd you feel about this?
This is fun. I think we're taking it one step too far when Archie transforms from Archie to Super Archie, Mr. Justice, and there's no glasses, there's literally nothing. It's the same face, mm-hmm. and he like is rescuing Veronica, and she's like, "Oh, Mr. Justice, thank you." And I'm like, "Archie was with you a second ago. How are you? What are we doing here?"
So the changing of outfits is not as clear as glasses for you. You're like, listen, if we're going to have comic book standards, there's got to be at least glasses.
You got to make a change. You got to make a light change.
I'll say something positive that I liked about this issue. I thought they found a new fun riff on the classic Veronica Archie Betty dynamic through the lens of superheroes. I think that worked pretty well. I agree with you. It definitely stretches credulity in terms of what's going on here. But also, I don't know, it's Archie Comics, so I can give them a little bit of a slide.
Yeah, and I just have to say, I enjoyed this as well. And I like they are taking their time to really give good reasons for what's happening in this. And Veronica taking the stand that she takes in this issue. And I'm looking forward to the Betty side of things, which I believe is coming next issue.
Yeah, I agree with Zalbatron. This is fun, and, you know, it's fun kind of like to see, oh, they have the secret identities, and they're keeping that from each other, and they're not going to work on a fun stuff. It's a great kind of twist on something we've seen a lot of different ways from Archie. So, yeah, I feel like this is a fun idea.
Would you call it a pretty Dees backwards blunt?
Oh, for sure, bro. For sure. No question.
No, never mind. Helverine, number 2 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Raphael Ienco. Dokken is still trying to figure out what he needs to do now that he's a Ghost Rider, and that includes fighting some hellacious baddies in Alaska, I guess. I don't know. It's up north somewhere. Pete, you have a question.
Yeah, I just feel like the title is very misleading because it's not Wolverine, it's Dokken. So this should be called Da Hell Is This? Because it's just doesn't make any sense. Because even when this starts, we got Dokken who's like telling the story like he's Wolverine, and he's not.
Wait,
so
you think he's impersonating Wolverine?
No, but it's just a little weird. Like, he's saying a lot of things that could be Wolverine, but I'm like, yo, bro, you didn't do that stuff like Wolverine did. You just, like, heard about it later.
He didn't say Bub.
He didn't have to say Bub.
What do you think about this comic book, though?
I do think, all that aside, you know, Hell coming for mutants is a fun idea, interesting story, and the art is great. It just makes me weirded out that it's called Hellverine and it's not Wolverine. So it's just kind of a weird, they're like, we should sell more comics if it's Hellverine versus.
I like that it's different. It makes, it's better if this is like a status quo thing. If the Ghost Rider's knocking, we're talking docking. That's what I always say. And that's what we get here. It's funny to me that the actual look of Hellverine, the Wolverine, like, head triangles,
yeah,
are fire. I was like, you don't need to do that. That's not, yeah, even a docket thing.
Well, but then he brushes them back and turns them back into his mohawk at one point. So that, yeah, was pretty cool.
That was cool.
Yeah.
But gross, I like this.
Gross visuals of this. Some gross demonic bone stuff. There you go.
Yeah.
Superman number 22 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. In this issue, Superman and Superwoman are facing down a bunch of refugees who have been left from Doomsday's previous rampages, and all they want is Doomsday back. Superman doesn't trust them. He doesn't want to do it, leading to a big fight where Superman and Doomsday actually team up, and people are so surprised. They're like, Superman and Doomsday teaming up in the book, which was pretty funny.
Yeah, I feel like this is a crazy story that gets even crazier, that's fun. I mean, there's a lot going on. Jimmy, stay the fuck out of the way. I mean, how many times do we got to say it, for Christ's sakes? But yeah, damn great art and action. I mean, I want more of that art. You know what I mean?
I like the status quo here. The idea that Superman has to keep Doomsday alive to prevent the end of the universe is
a twist.
Yeah, it's a twist. And I continue to really like the Clark Lois both being superpowered stuff. It's really working here, and I want more of it. And then the Jimmy Silver Banshee stuff is even working, I think. It's all working.
It's all working. It's great. In Bloom, number 2 for Boob Studios, written by Michael W. Conrad, art by John J. Pearson. This takes place in a world where people have started to bloom, turn into plant people. Everybody loves it, except for one cop who does not love it. And we find out exactly why in this issue, in the grossest, most horrific way possible.
Yeah, you want to talk about some gross stuff and some body horror stuff. Holy crap, that bloom was
This nuts. Is like Hellraiser, but with plants, is basically.
Yeah, it was like, I'm not going to be able to get that out of my head ever. Thanks a lot.
I loved it. It was my favorite. This is my favorite book that also rhymes with Rocket Raccoon. And that raccoon? Section,
raccoon, because what's about bloom?
Yeah. Bloom, raccoon.
In Bloom, right here in the Doom Room.
Hey, we're no longer in the Doom Room, bro. You can't just say that. You can't just.
You can't break habits, though. Yeah. You can't break habits. This comic, that the sequence where we get the cop's wife's bloom is worth the price of admission for this. I thought it was good. The first page has a great bloom on it as well. This is, you know, we know where this is going a bit. The one person who doesn't like it is probably going to be right at the end of the day. So I'm into the story, finding out how we get there.
Yeah, this is scary as shit, but also really impressive. But trigger warning on the body horror shit. You'll never get that out of your brain.
TVA number 2 from Marvel, written by Catherine Blair, art by Per Perez. This is continuing the integration of the TVA from Loki into the Marvel Comics. Spider-Gwen and a bunch of other folks are on a team together. In this issue, they go down to Hell to try to investigate who is giving everybody nightmares. I gotta say, I don't mind this team, and I don't mind the action that's happening in the book. In particular, I think the layouts of Hell are very nice. I don't understand why this is TVA stuff. Like, the TVA investigating nightmares and going to Hell does not seem like the sort of thing that a multiverse time cop organization would be investigating.
Well, wait for it, because maybe there's something going on in Hell that relates to the TVA, my friend.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you take the TVA out of it, I think, and this is like Exiles, but a little different, I think that works. It's working. I really like the art, and the design of the book really has taken from Loki like an aesthetic, and that's really cool. A lot of the like panels are framed very differently from a lot of other comics. The color palette is really nice and like the Loki TV show. So I am enjoying this.
Yeah, P Squared's doing an amazing job on the art. There's this one panel where Owen Wilson is just kind of like leaning back, like checking out someone in the corner. And it's so artistically done in such a cool way that's hard to do in still images, you know? So I was really impressed with the kind of like having a movement and, you know, drawing your eye in kind of a interesting way. So, yeah, artistically, what's happening here is impressive. I hear what the Zelbatron is saying, like, why is this a TVA story? But I feel like we're still in issue two, so there could be some other answers coming. But also that one pager with Miss Minutes is, you know, is worth the price of admission right there. That continues to be such a weird, fun, creative thing that's a joy at the end of every ish.
Star Trek. Number 28 from IDW, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, art by Tess Fowler. Lore has destroyed the entire universe, except somehow Bajor, back in time, where Sisko is still alive and still...
Thong.
Yeah, there you go. I have nothing else to say. You stole my joke.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's
wow,
okay.
Really?
It's okay. I was going to make a thong song joke.
Oh, no. You two are best friends.
Peas in a pod.
Best
we're,
friends?
Like, we're like meats and potatoes.
Yeah, no, you are.
Anyway, Sisko is around and somehow functionally immortal at this point, so slowly goes about shaping the destiny of Bajor. This is... I think this is awesome. I particularly Tess Fowler on the art here makes a very different look and feel for the previous issues. I don't know where this story is going or how we're going to get back to the lore stuff, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's so far, the swerve is far from the normal. I really liked where the last issue ended, and I was very surprised that this is where we go with it. But this has echoes of the everyone's favorite Star Trek The Next Generation episode where Picard plays a flute and lives a life on another planet. So that's cool.
Yeah, I agree. T. Fowles is killing it on the art. And yeah, if you like Star Trek, I think you'll enjoy this. They're making a lot of fun choices. And, you know, it's interesting.
Last but not least, Power Rangers Prime, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Melissa Flores, art by Michael Igg. This takes place in the future where there's no Power Rangers, or are there? Because Rita Repulsa is taking on a bunch of scrappy kids who all dress in very different colored clothing, some yellow, some pink, et cetera, et cetera.
No reason.
And for no reason. No don't reason. Look
people
into
just it like
too
different
much.
Color. Don't look people
yeah,
like different
exactly,
colors.
Exactly.
And meanwhile, there is a Power Rangers coin that has been broken apart that they're all going after in a museum, leading to, well, something happens at the end. What do you guys think about this?
Well, first
it's
off,
morphine time.
Oh, all right.
Morphine time? Is that
it's
what
morphine time. I'm in pain, guys.
You gotta...
It's morphine time.
Well, it's great.
I'm going to take a milky tube rip of that morphine.
Nice. That would be dangerous.
Yeah. Don't recommend that. I just think that, you know, they're trying to make museums fun again, and they really achieved that in this issue. You know what I mean? Tell kids that there's hidden treasures in museums, and maybe they'll show up, you know? But I really liked I felt like it was a badass reveal at the end, and they set it up well, and they really delivered. And so that was nice. I think the art's great. And I'm a sucker for some Power Rangers.
That's true. Pete is a sucker for some Power Rangers. Give me the Mystic Knights of Tir Nanog all day, every day. Those are my – give me the prime Mystic Knights of Tir Nanog. That's the comic I want.
Great bar, Tir Nanog.
Nice. Look, we're still talking, and we're making even more sense than we have all night. The art is very good in this. I am
don't
surprised.
Don't give away the ending.
I'm surprised it's taken... Yeah, don't give it away. Surprised it's taken this long for the thing that happens at the end of the issue to happen.
Everybody dies. And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Club on Blue Sky, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast, many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
May your submarines be faced and your tubes remain milky.
Yeah.
All right. So when you're sucking out a big bog.
Oh, God. You've cut it. Cut the feed. What? It's over. Sucking?
Sucking on a big bog. Oh,
sucking.
Oh, yes.
He sucked the milk right out of that tube.
Comic book love, comic book love. They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your inhaler.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2-liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.